I thought last year was really exciting because it taught us yet again, you cannot write off good coaches and you cannot write off hungry teams that have a chip on their shoulder with something to prove. Hello, welcome to the August 8th edition. It's Monday. It's always college football. He's Mark Kubiak. I'm Greg McElroy. We really appreciate you being with us from wherever it is you're getting the content, whether that's on Apple Podcast, on Spotify, or if you're here with us on the ESPN YouTube channel, please like, rate, and subscribe. It helps us out. It helps the show out. So we really appreciate the future interaction. We have a great game plan in store today. We'll get to that in a moment, but we have a poll. We have a poll, ladies and gentlemen, not a pulse, a poll, all right? We have the top 25 coaches poll. Is it the USA Today coaches poll? Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It's something. We have a poll, ladies and gentlemen, and we know it doesn't matter. Rip it up, toss it to shreds. We'll have a conversation later why we shouldn't have preseason polls, but that's not for today. We have something to look forward to. So right now, Alabama sits atop the coaches poll with 54 first place votes. In at number two is the Ohio State Buckeyes. They have 5 first place votes. I'm surprised, actually, that that gap is as wide as the coaches suggest. Because Alabama with 54 against Ohio State's 5. I thought it'd be somewhere, I thought Bama would be 1, but I thought it'd be like 35-20 or something like that. Not so heavily in favor of the Crimson Tide. Ohio State, of course, with the 5. Georgia is 3rd. They have 6 first place votes in the coaches poll. Here's where it gets interesting. The Clemson Tigers are sitting at number 4 in the coaches poll. Now, I like Clemson this year, too. I'm glad that other people are taking note. They bring quite a bit back, and there's reason to believe that they could find their way back into the playoff again. To round out the top 5, you have Notre Dame, and then 6 through 10 is as follows. Michigan is at 6. Texas A&M is at 7. Utah is at 8, Oklahoma's at 9, and then Baylor rounds out the top 10. If you want any further information, you can check out at AlwaysCFB on Twitter, or you can hit it up on Instagram as well, AlwaysCFB. We will tweet the poll, want your reactions to the poll, at AlwaysCFB. We have a great game plan in store for you today. We're going to dive into some teams from last year that won 10 games. Some teams, they base the success of their season on whether or not they win a championship. Well, one team in particular, especially in the last couple of weeks, basically said, hey, if we don't win a national championship, the season's a failure. That's what Bryce Young from Alabama, that's what he said. All right. I don't know if I'd go that far because that means that 130 teams out of 131 in the FBS have failed seasons. No way. I don't look at it that way. Look at it through the bigger picture. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion about what success is. It's a relative term. But usually the benchmark for a great season is 10 wins. We'll dive into a couple teams that won 10 games a year ago and tell you what's good, what's bad, positives, negatives about those teams, whether or not they might be able to repeat the success of last year here in 2022. We'll do that, and we'll get into your mailbag questions as well. We're very, very excited to dive in to the mailbag. So without much further ado, let's talk about it.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10-win seasons are very much underappreciated, I think, when it comes to college football fans. I think most teams, most programs, and most fans will look at it and say, well, my team should win 10 games a year. I mean, at the bare minimum, that is the absolute have-to-have-it win. Look at Nebraska. They fired Bo Pelini when he only won 9 games of the year. Look at Texas and how many times they won 10 wins a season under Mac Brown. Well, eventually it's not good enough, but for the most part, winning 10 games a year is one heck of an achievement. Look, I know that some programs define success or failure by winning championships. One in particular, just last week, Alabama, Bryce Young came out and said, if we don't win a national championship, the season's a failure. Now, I don't necessarily look at it that way, but some people do, and I completely understand that line of thinking. But there's one national champion a year. There's 131 teams playing FBS football right now. 131. There's one national champion. Well, are the other 130 teams, are they failures? I don't see it that way. What about if you define success as a conference champion? Well, there's only 10 more of those. Five in the Power Five, five in the Group of Five. So are the other 120 teams, are their seasons considered a failure? Absolutely not. No, I think 10 wins is often the benchmark for what I would consider to be a great season. And I think it's more difficult to do than some people like to suggest. If you think about it, in 2021 and in 2019, let's exclude the COVID year of 2020. Let's just get rid of that year. Some teams played four games. All right, so let's just get rid of that year as far as how we gauge success. In 2021 and 2019, there were 28 programs that had 10 wins. In 2018, there were 25 programs that reached that mark. So it is achievable, but let's not get it twisted. It's extremely difficult to do. Well, let's dive into a few teams from last year that won 10 games, and let's gauge whether or not they'll be able to repeat that success here in 2022. So for each of these teams, we have a little bit of coaches sound. We're going to listen to coaches, but we're also going to give you the good news and the bad news of each of these teams that are coming off of great seasons. Let's start with the Ole Miss Rebels. Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, they're coming off their first 10-win season since 2015. Their first 10-win season in the regular season ever. And they were on the verge, if not for an injury to Matt Corral, of maybe chasing the first 11-win season in Ole Miss history. They're looking for first back-to-back 10-win seasons since 1959 and 1960. So they are in very, very thin air relative to what their program's done in the past. So let's listen to what their head coach, Lane Kiffin, has to say.
A lot of new guys, as you guys know. So a lot of work to do with them. Same story, you know, on and off the field. I think our coaches have done a good job so far. There's a lot of meshing together there as well, with half the staff being new and a new strength coach. So it's great to have a training camp. You know, sometimes you got so many returning pieces, it's not as important, and you're more managing just to stay healthy. This would not be the case.
All right, you heard it there from Lane Kiffin. This team is on the cusp of doing something that is historically significant for their football program. But like I said already, we're going to hit the bad news and then the good news. We're going to start with the bad because we want to leave you feeling good about what the Rebels might be as we get into this upcoming season. Let's start with the bad news. We all know what they lost. They lost Matt Corral. Not only was Matt Corral a significant player on the field, but I think his leadership, his competitiveness, it oozed to every corner of that locker room. And when he went down and we were calling the game there at the Sugar Bowl, it was as if all the life went out of the sideline for Ole Miss and they really couldn't get anything going after that point. So he meant not just what it meant to play quarterback at a high level, but I think he was their heart and soul, and having to replace that will be insanely difficult. Here's the other things they lost. They lost their top four rushers from a year ago. Matt Corral was one of them, by the way, but we cannot lose sight of the importance of what Jerrion Ealy meant to that team as far as not just running the football, but also contributing the passing game. Snoop Connor, who was a physical presence, a downhill back. Ole Miss had long been kind of questioned, how tough are they? How physical are they? Well, Snoop Connor left no doubt. And then finally also lost Harry Parrish, who transferred to Miami, who had one of the best little moves where he put that hard inside and then go vertical off his outside foot. Those three being gone, including Matt Corral, is something that will be very difficult to replace. I'll tell you why in just a little bit, because that team, They were 12th in the country. Everyone wants to talk about Matt Corral. Everyone wants to talk about Lane Kiffin, how they're going to air it out all over the yard. They were 12th in college football and third in the SEC in rushing. So this is a team that wanted to get downhill in the run game. Having to replace that productivity at running back will be difficult to achieve. And then finally, you lose both coordinators. And we're not talking about just average Joes at coordinator. We're talking about two guys that you talk to people across the landscape of the sport. They've done an amazing job for a very long period of time. Jeff Lebby, who of course now is at Oklahoma, he came from that UCF system, and Lane Kiffin, for the first time in his career, basically said, yeah, all right, I'm not going to call the plays. I trust Jeff Lebby that much. Well, look at the results. They scored 1,000,000 points, and now Jeff Lebby has parlayed his experience at Oxford into maybe the highest paid coordinator in college football. We haven't quite seen the numbers yet, but he's in the mix. Let me just tell you that. He's now at Oklahoma and will be implementing that tempo, spread it out downfield, get numbers and try to run the football type of approach offensively as they are trying to turn things over in Norman, Oklahoma. And then the defensive side of the football, we're not talking about this one quite as much, but if you actually look at the improvements, now no one's going to sit here and confuse Ole Miss as the 85 Bears. All right, we get that. But last year, DJ Durkin did a really nice job. They had a great edge rusher and edge defender in Sam Williams. He's now playing in the NFL. They're going to have to try to figure out a way to replicate his lost production. Then you look at the second level, Chance Campbell, their middle linebacker. He's gone. He's out to the NFL as well. He was a transfer from Maryland, did some nice things there for the Rebels in the middle of that defense. And the guy that I might have liked the most on their defensive side is Mark Robinson. He was a backup linebacker, but he got drafted in the sixth round of the Pittsburgh Steelers because he could bring the heat. The dude was going to hit you. I think he had like 3 targeting penalties last year. We're not encouraging that, but he just set the tone for Ole Miss throughout the course of the season. So replicating that success that group had last year. Now, no one's saying, like I said, they are not going to be a team that's going to hold teams to 12, 13, 14 points. But they might be a team that can hold you to 28, and I feel pretty confident in their offense being able to get 30. Now, 28 points, that shouldn't be the barometer. They should strive for a little better than that, but they took strides last year, I think in large part due to DJ Durkin. Now he's at Texas A&M, so replacing him will be challenging. Let's go to the good news, because I don't want it to be all bad. It's not all doom and gloom in Oxford, Mississippi. It never is. It's one of the best college towns in America. But here's the good news. All the pieces that you just lost, that we just referenced and talked about, according to 247, you have the number 2 ranked portal class in the country. Number 1 was SC. Ole Miss was number 2. Lane Kiffin's been called the Portal King, right? He's embraced that nickname. He's embraced this new age, this new era of college football. So what do? You lost your top 4 rushers. Hey, let's go find some running backs. You go get Zach Evans, who's a transfer from TCU, 5-star guy coming out of high school. Probably going to become a 5-star guy on the field as well. He has insane, insane talent. Very powerful, can contribute in the passing game. Think he'll be a factor there, a weapon there. No matter how Lane wants to use him, he's going to get looks in what should be favorable run looks because of how they're going to spread receivers out horizontally. You also bring in, because you don't want to have just one running back, you got to have 2. You bring in Ulysses Bentley from SMU. A little bit smaller, about 185 pounds, but is really quick twitch. And we'll do some of the things that Jerry Neely did last year. Jerry Neely was small too. Wasn't huge north and south type of guy. That was Snoop Connor. Well, Zach Evans now fills the Snoop Connor void, except maybe with a slightly higher ceiling. And then Ulysses Bentley, he'll fill the Jerry Neely void as, hey, get me the ball on the perimeter. Let me do work in space. Those two guys, huge, huge additions through the transfer portal. But it's not to be outdone. You bring in 2 guys from SC. Michael Trigg at tight end, who they are going to use and move him around. He'll be in the slot. He'll be out wide. He'll be on the end man of the line of scrimmage. They might even have him in the backfield. Lane's very creative when it comes to moving pieces around. You got to think that Michael Trigg is going to be a fun piece to work with as they're going throughout this season. And then at quarterback too, Jackson Dart. Will he be their starter? We don't know just yet. I still think that this competition is very much up in the air because Luke Altmaier is a guy that the coaching staff has raved about on more than one occasion. He's a gamer. He played his heart out there against Baylor in the Sugar Bowl, and he was thrust into the lineup with really not a whole lot of help. That was a difficult situation to be thrust into. So I think people have unfairly judged what he might be. And ultimately, when we fast forward a little bit, he might end up actually being the best guy for the job. Jackson Dart struggled in the spring too. I think that's a 50-50 competition. Flip a coin. We'll see who wins it. They didn't just do it on the offensive side of the football, though. They actually went and added some pieces on defense as well. Jared Ivey is a defensive end from Georgia Tech. He might replace Sam Williams there on the end man of the line of scrimmage. And then at the second level, Troy Brown, undersized linebacker from Central Michigan, but crazy productive last year. The guy flies sideline to sideline, probably going to play outside in this system. But either way, they replaced a couple of key departures with a couple of key pieces in the portal. That's the first reason why I feel very good about what Ole Miss might be this year. The second reason, you still have Lane Kiffin. You can tell me Jeff Lebby's gone. Lane Kiffin still, to this day, if not the best offensive mind in college football as far as creating matchups and creating opportunities for their offense and finding double move matchups. We're going to hit guys over the top. He's going to toss a clipboard in the air, and he's going to celebrate before the ball is even completed. He's still one of the very best. The guy's a mad scientist, Monday through Friday, being able to draw things up to create favorable matchups for them. So regardless of who they lost, they're still going to be able to find pieces to take advantage of the opposing defense. And then finally, yes, front seven defensively might be a little bit of a work in progress. You bring back everybody in the secondary. And in a league that is progressing more and more towards airing it out, you look at what Bama's done in the past. You know they're going to try to throw the football. Mississippi State, Mike Leach, you know they want to throw the football. You got to think that LSU and A&M, they're going to try to find balance, but for the most part, they're going to put an awful lot on their quarterback's shoulders. Arkansas is going to be a run-first team, but who knows? Maybe we see a little bit more from KJ Jefferson through the air. So if I want to be strong here heading in to 2022 in the SEC West, I really want to be strong in the secondary, and that's one thing that Ole Miss certainly has going for him heading into this upcoming season. Moving up north now, or as some schools like to refer to him as, the team up north. Well, it's the Michigan Wolverines. They're coming off their first 10-win season since 2018 and looking to find their first back-to-back 10-win seasons since 2015 and 2016. Those were Jim Harbaugh's first two seasons there in Ann Arbor. There is some turnover. There are a couple question marks. I don't think they're huge question marks, but there are some things that need to be ironed out, including how is this dynamic going to work right now, as they transition from Josh Gattis at offensive coordinator to a two-coordinator system. I've always wondered how it works, so let's hear from them. Let's hear from Matt Weiss on his role as the co-coordinator for the Michigan Wolverines.
Yeah, I think it's really a blessing for us to have it's another Jim Harbaugh stroke of genius that he somehow found a way where he got two, where everybody else has one. And I think we work really well together. And we're very collaborative. And I know Sharon is a great resource for me. And I try to be a great resource for him. And I think so far, we're really happy with where the offense is at and where we're going. And we have the same vision all on one accord. And I think it's exciting. I know I'm glad that he's here with me. He's a great coach. And hopefully he would tell you the same thing.
All right, we've heard from Matt Weiss. Now let's transition to the other coordinator who's going to be in charge of, we'll find out. Let's hear from Sharon Moore, the offensive coordinator or co-offensive coordinator of Michigan.
We'll be collaborative. We have a method to how we're doing things. We've been pretty smooth so far, and it's just been rolling. The kids have really adjusted, and everything's been good.
All right, let's talk about Michigan now. Michigan, I think last year was such a breath of fresh air. They made me so happy. Not because I'm a Michigan fan, but because it was just fun, I think, as a fan of college football to see Jim Harbaugh answer the critics. Remember last year going into the season, everyone said, well, he just took a huge pay cut. He's get a 1-year prove it deal. He said, all right, I'm going to bet on myself. Let's just go see what we can do. Let's get it done. Everyone was saying, oh man, maybe they'll finish third, fourth in the West or in the East, excuse me. Well, clearly that wasn't the case. Oh, Jim Harbaugh is never going to win the Big Ten running the ball like that, that archaic offense. Well, what did he do? I thought last year was really exciting because it taught us yet again, you cannot write off good coaches and you cannot write off hungry teams that have a chip on their shoulder with something to prove. There's one thing we learned about last year. That's exactly what it was. And I think if you look at this Michigan team, they have a lot of reasons to believe they're going to be maybe not just as good, but there are a few things that they can iron out to get back to a position where they could potentially threaten to get back to the college football playoff, where I know they want another shot at it. Last year did not go their way against Georgia there in the semifinal. I know they want a shot. I know they can get a shot. They just have a few things to figure out. Let's start with the bad news. Do I really need to say it? Like, am I really telling you anything you don't know? Aiden Hutchinson, David Ajabo, Hinton. I mean, you name it, that front four defensively, really the whole front seven. I mean, goodness gracious, these guys could get after the opposing quarterback. And you've probably heard me say this. I've said this 100,000 times, it feels like. If I can have two positions in college football, two, I get two, it doesn't matter. I'm taking quarterback and I'm taking defensive line. Well, quarterback, more on them in just a minute. But defensive line, this group single-handedly carried Michigan to their first Big Ten title in quite a while. And it was so fun to watch. Aiden Hutchinson, of course, now a Detroit Lion. David Ajabo, if not for the injury, he would have gone in the first round as well. Either way, those two guys will be next to impossible to replace. Why? Because you have to figure out a way to get pressure. And if you can't get pressure with four like they could last year, then you got to blitz guys, which puts more pressure on what? The secondary. And more pressure on the coordinator to get guys free. So there's a lot of things that will be difficult for Michigan to overcome when trying to replace those pieces. They've recruited well, but either way, if you can expect guys to just step right in and fill that void, it's high expectations. So we'll see what happens. You have to also replace both coordinators. We talked about the offensive coordinators just a moment ago. How does that dynamic work? I seem to think it's really not that archaic anymore to think, well, you can have two coordinators. It's not like the situation, this is ironic that we're talking about Michigan when it comes to this thing. It's not like where if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. Well, if you have two coordinators, you have none. Well, look at Michigan, two quarterbacks and two coordinators. I think they'll be just fine. So what I would say about this is, while I'm disappointed that they have to replace Josh Gattis, I thought Gattis did an amazing job last year and route to the Burles Award, which goes to the nation's top assistant. I thought they did a lot of things that really made me proud as a guy that appreciates offensive football. I thought they got creative from time to time with how they created run looks, that the offensive line played their tail off all season long, and they rode those guys as best they could. I thought they used the quarterback derby beautifully. It's not easy to take out Cade McNamara, put in JJ McCarthy, and vice versa. That's a difficult thing to try to figure out. And I thought they handled it and managed that beautifully last year by making sure that both guys could highlight their own strengths and they could kind of push away their own weaknesses. So I thought everything, the way they handled their offense last year, was a thing of beauty, especially knowing week one, you lose Ronnie Bell, man. That's a difficult thing to overcome. You lose your number one target, your number one weapon week one, and then all of a sudden, hey, we got to go score a lot of points. Boys, let's go figure it out. It's not an easy thing to do, so I have to tip my cap to the offensive staff led by Josh Gattis last year at Michigan. You also lose your defensive coordinator. And I know that Mike McDonald, I don't know if he had a huge say in Jesse Minner being named his replacement, but it feels like Jesse Minner completely understands what he's stepping into. Anytime you're going to a place where they've had three different defense coordinators in three different years, that's a difficult thing. And philosophically, from year one to year two was somewhat different. So I look at where they're at right now, and Mike McDonald now going back to the Ravens to be the defensive coordinator. He spent time with Jesse Minter on that staff in the past. So hopefully there won't be much difference between what they were doing last year defensively and what they're doing this year defensively as far as terminology, as far as system, as far as philosophy, how they want to get after the quarterback, what coverages they're going to lean on third down and red zone. So hopefully there will be a lot of carryover from last year to this year. So either way, though, anytime you have to replace a coordinator that did a great job last year, that's a difficult thing to unfold. And here's the third reason why it's bad news for the Wolverines here chasing 10 wins again this year. You have to go to Columbus. And the Buckeyes seem ticked off. It doesn't mean that you don't have the recipe. You clearly do. Look at what you did last year and being able to neutralize that passing attack, being able to find ways to create yardage on the ground, being able to allow your quarterbacks to make plays in perimeter, in space, create big plays, all those other things. You did such a beautiful job last year at home, and it felt like that game was many, many years in the making. Well, guess what? What did Ryan Day say throughout the course of his press conference at Big Ten Media Days? He said, our first goal is to beat the team up north. Well, you think they haven't circled that game this year? You think they haven't talked about that game internally? Because I can speak from my own experience. Y'all, when we lost to Florida in 2008, all we talked about all offseason was beating Florida. We have to beat Florida. It's all about Florida. It's all about the Gators. Well, when we got our opportunity to play the Gators in 2009, after an entire offseason was spent focusing on one team, we smoked them. That's a difficult thing to overcome. So don't think for a second that's not bad news. Doesn't mean you can't win. Just means you better be ready to play your A game, because that might be what it takes to be able to get a win on the road against your bitter arch rival. All right, those are the bad news. Here's the good news. You have weapons. That's number one. Tons of weapons. Weapons that last year, there were some question marks about, okay, what's the pecking order at wide receiver? What are you going to do as far as the passing game is concerned? Who are going to be the explosive playmakers? Everyone said, well, Michigan lacks athleticism. They don't have it. No, there were several guys that stepped up throughout the course of the season. Didn't matter on the game. Guys that stepped up. I love Blake Corum. I think he's a legitimate Heisman Trophy consideration. He's in that conversation. Now, he's got to stay healthy. He's got to be at 100%, and he's going to have to be a workhorse. Hassan Haskins not there. They still have really good pieces to spell Corum. I think that he'll be in a little bit of a running back by committee approach. But when the going gets tough, I want the best player on the field with the ball in his hand. More often than not, when Michigan's on offense, Blake Corum is the best player. The good news is, in addition to Blake Corum, you get Ronnie Bell back. Hurt his knee in the first game of last year, missed the season. You know, it crushed him to not be out there as a part of that very special unit offensively. I think they're in good shape with their weapons. I think, two, you have two quarterbacks. And right now, I know people would say, well, that's not a good thing. I want one of those guys to emerge. I want there to be a situation where there's a clear one, clear two, and that's the way we're going to operate. But right now, when J.J. McCarthy's on the field versus when Cade McNamara's on the field, you have to prepare for almost two completely different offenses. J.J. McCarthy's going to really lean into the quarterback run. He's going to use his athleticism. He's going to do all the different things as far as the run game's concerned that Cade McNamara is probably not going to be a big part of. Now, Cade McNamara is an athlete too. It's not like he's chopped liver back there standing stationary in the pocket. No, he can move around. He can create. But J.J. McCarthy, when he's on the field, every single defender is thinking, I got to stop quarterback run. That dude's scary with the ball in his hands. Let's make sure the ball's not in his hands once this ball is snapped. McNamara, he's the one that came out and said at Big Ten Media Days, hey, last time I checked, there's only one returning Big Ten championship quarterback in the league. Give me that guy. I want that competitor. I love that he's coming out swinging. He's fired up for this opportunity to fend off what is a very worthy opponent in the quarterback competition. And I think Cade McNamara's best football is in front of him. He's savvy. He does the little things. I think he's a little bit like Stetson Bennett in the sense that he probably doesn't get the respect he deserves, but he deserves it, man, because he's a big reason why they were in that position last year. And then final reason why it's good news for the Wolverines. When you think about the DC situation like we just talked about, man, how much can it really change from year one to year two? And I'm saying year one to year two because Jesse Minter's been outspoken about the fact that, hey, man, I want this to be year two in Mike McDonald's system. I might be the guy that's pulling the trigger and calling the plays on game day, but everything we do in the days and weeks leading up to our specific matchups, it's going to be just like Mike McDonald did. So there'll be familiarity, there'll be continuity, and as a result, the guys can play fast. So I think there's a lot of good right now when it comes to the Michigan Wolverines. I'm bullish. I'm optimistic. I think people are writing them off way too soon and focusing way too much on what they lost and not focusing quite enough on what they bring back. And yet another team coming off their first 10-win season since 2015, that'd be the Houston Cougars. They're looking for their first back-to-back 10-win seasons in school history. And it wasn't just a 10-win season, I might add. They were 12-2 with wins over Auburn. And they gave Cincinnati a run. This team did everything that you could possibly want from them last year. And yet they now enter the season as what I think might be the best Group of Five team in America. Here's their head coach, Dana Holgorsen.
You know, our first team meeting was this morning. And I told them, look, I mean, we're 0-0 and everything that happened last year don't count. And, you know, all the expectations and all the preseason accolades and, you know, all that stuff doesn't mean anything. And it does. It's about what happens practice one through practice 25 and being in the best position as a football team to be able to play that first game against UTSA.
All right, that was Dana Holgorsen on what his team might be this upcoming season. But let's dive into exactly what the Houston Cougars bring back. We got to call one of their games last year. I was thoroughly impressed. I think they are legit. Across the board, they have some great pieces. They lost a couple good pieces to the NFL, no denying that. But when you look across the board, they have continuity, they have a lot of experience, and they have a lot of top-tier talent. But let's dive into, like we have the last couple teams, let's dive in to the bad news, all right? Even with an undefeated record, and this is going to sound harsh, it's going to sound unfair, unfortunate, whatever. Even with an undefeated record, their schedule's just not really that difficult. Now, that can be a benefit and a curse. We've seen it in the past. We've seen teams that go undefeated that don't get the same level of respect as those that have beaten quality competition. Think about last year. Who did Cincinnati beat in the non-conference? And why do you think they were held in such high regard? Because they took care of business against two legit Power Five teams. That's the problem with Houston this year. They have quality teams on their schedule. And I think the American, you can make a strong argument that it's the best league in college football that isn't in the Power Five. You can make a strong argument in that behalf, but Houston does not play UCF. They did not play Cincinnati in the regular season. And their non-conference schedule is as follows. At UT San Antonio, really good team, but is a win against Texas San Antonio on the road going to do enough to influence what the committee might think of Houston at season's end? Remember last year, I mean, Texas San Antonio, legit team, 10-win team. So that's a very, very good team. The Roadrunners have a ton of respect for what they do, but will the committee acknowledge that as a big-time win? Then you go to Texas Tech. Texas Tech, this year, I'm cautiously optimistic they'll take a huge step, but will it be enough, a la last year, what Cincinnati did to Notre Dame? Will it be enough to potentially make an argument on behalf of the Cougars when we get to season's end and we're starting to weigh one loss Power Five conference champions, two loss Power Five conference champions against an undefeated American Athletic Conference champion in Houston? I like Houston a lot. You also have Kansas. I mean, you have other games as well. You have Rice. So that's your non-conference. And the only team that I could kind of align this with was Baylor back in the day, 2014. A lot of people thought Baylor should have gotten in to the college football playoff that year. Remember, they were 11-1. They beat TCU, who other people thought was one of the best teams in America. They lost, I believe it's to West Virginia, whoever it was. Either way, their non-conference was awful. And it really hurt Baylor's resume to the point in which they fell behind Ohio State when evaluating the bigger picture. Of course, the Big 12's made changes since that point, but either way, their non-conference is what ultimately led to why they were viewed a little bit more harshly than some of the critics thought they should have been viewed. That could be Houston's problem this year. Houston's played really tough schedules for a very long time. I remember they've played Oklahoma a couple times. They've played a lot of teams. Shoot, they've done a great job in bowl games. They've beaten Florida State on big, big, high-profile bowl games. But is this regular season non-conference schedule going to be enough? I have a difficult time thinking that. Of course, in the American, you play some good pieces. You could play some really good teams. But would it be enough to get in front of, like I said, you're not, when you're in the group of five, unfortunately for you, it's kind of up to what happens in the Power Five leagues. You need a two-loss Power Five champion for an undefeated group of five champion to be considered. Would a two-loss Power Five champion with a couple big wins be ahead of a Houston team with some questionable non-conference wins? We'll find out. That's the bad news. The second worst news is the fact that your best offensive weapon, arguably, Alton McCaskill, who you're running back, was recruited by everybody in college football, except because of COVID, he couldn't take visits. So he decided to stay at home. Went to Houston, like so many other great players before him have. He tore his ACL in spring. Now he's cleared to run. I checked his prognosis this morning. I'm not a doctor. Okay, but being cleared to run and being cleared to play football, I would think are two very different things. So hopefully he can come back in a timely enough manner to make an impact when they get in the conference play and when they really start to need him, because that guy is a complete difference maker. They still have Henry, who's a solid number two back, but he's more of a change of pace back as opposed to the guy that's going to carry the load. And in this offense, they want to run the football, and they want to run the ball an awful lot. They have good pieces at other spots, but having McGaskill back would be massive for them as they head into a season with significant expectations. And then finally, here's the last thing that I'm concerned about, is having to replace Marcus Jones. Now, everyone knows about the defensive line, and they lost, you know, a second round pick. Also, that's fine. But the difference maker to me on that side of the ball, more so than just about anybody, was Marcus Jones. Now, he was undersized. He was 5'8" at corner. But what he meant in the return game and how he was willing to go out and cover the best wide receiver for the opposition every single week and wanted it. He wanted that matchup. He wanted to prove that he could play corner at a really high level, and he did so time and time again. Being able to replace that will not be easy, not just because of what he brought to the field, but also what he brought to the locker room with character, with toughness, with a blue-collar mentality that permeated its way all throughout the rest of the locker room. The good news, even if it takes Alton McCaskill a little bit of time, they're still going to be fine offensively with some of the weapons that they bring back. We know that Clayton Tune feels like he's played a ton of football. But if you talk to anybody associated with Houston, Dana Holgorsen specifically, he'll tell you that his quarterbacks usually start to really come on in year three, year four in the system. Well, the good news is that's what Clayton Tune's done. He's been there for a while. He has a great understanding of what they want to be offensively. I think he understands what he can do, what he can't do, when to take risks, when not to take risks. What type of hole can I throw it into when working against some of the best defenses in America? And if you look at it, man, when he was playing well against Cincinnati in the American Athletic Conference Championship game, they were in the game. It was tight. It was close. Couple mistakes by him. Next thing you know, it gets sideways there early in the third quarter against the Bearcats. So it'll be very interesting to see if he can elevate his game to another level. I think he can. And then Nathaniel Dell at the outside, he's going to be primarily playing the slot because of the pieces they added in the transfer portal. Well, he got a ton of volume last year. He got a ton of looks last year, had a ton of catches, a ton of yards after catch last year. I think all those numbers could go up this year if he's primarily playing out of the slot and there's more threats outside, which there should be because of how Houston has attacked the transfer portal to try to bring in more depth and more quality at wide receiver. Couple that with the solid additions, and you can feel really solid about what this passing attack might look like. And then finally, what might be a curse could also be a blessing. I already referenced the fact that you don't have Cincinnati and you don't have UCF on the regular season schedule. Now, that might work against you when we look at everything at season's end when trying to make a case for yourself as far as the college football playoff is concerned. But today, the case is not about the college football playoff. The case is about whether or not you can get to 10 wins. I think you have a real strong chance, with the exception of Texas Tech, to be favored in each of your first four games. And then you look at who you play throughout the rest of the regular season, everything looks pretty gettable. Where you play teams, when you play teams, how things stack up as far as your bye is concerned. I think Houston is without question poised to get to 10 wins, and I wouldn't be shocked if they flirted with 12 like they did a year ago. All right, so fun to break down some of those teams that won 10 a year ago. And by the way, if you think we're done with that, it's a series. Don't worry, we're going to get back to it. Teams like Wake Forest, teams like Baylor. There's going to be a handful of other teams that we get to that won 10 games last year that we're going to do deep comprehensive dives on. Can they get back? We shall see. You just have to tune in for a future episode. But one of our favorite segments we need to move along to now is our mailbag. So Mark, let's kick it off. See, it's a matter of perspective, right? Like, I don't know if you can officially say, hey, well, this guy's one, this guy's two, this guy's three. So I can break it off into a few different segments. And knowing that we've talked about a couple already today, let's just throw them in. One, Jeff Lebby at Oklahoma does an amazing job of being able to kind of put in that Baylor system that he ran with success. And it did a similar system at UCF, did a great job at Ole Miss, but now he's really going to have a chance to man the ship for Oklahoma. He'd be in the mix. Number two, I'd have Josh Gattis. He won the Broyles Award a year ago as the nation's top assistant. He's now moving down to Miami. I found it interesting that three of the top five guys that I found are three of the top five that I listed are actually at new jobs this year, which I found interesting. Jeff Lebby being one, Josh Gattis being two. He's moving from Michigan down to Miami, but he did a great job last year. Now I think he inherits a roster that's pretty dang talented. Does have a couple question marks along the line of scrimmage, but for the most part, Miami might be able to score some points this year. And if Josh Gattis has a great season as the offensive coordinator, I'm not sure any of us would be surprised if he's on the short list next year for a potential head coaching job. So he'd be in the mix as well. Other guys that I kind of thought about when I saw this question for the first time, Kendall Briles, who I think is an amazing offensive mind, does a great job of creating issues for the opposing defense, making his quarterback comfortable, creating numbers and good quality looks in the run game, and featuring wide receivers. If you look at what they did last year with Treylon Burks, how they moved him around, motioned him, you know, took him in the backfield, motioned him out, found favorable matchups for him so that him and his quarterback could take advantage of that matchup nightmare that they would create. Man, he did a great job. I think he should be a head coach and probably will be at some point in the very near future. Another guy who I think should be a head coach in the near future is Jeff Grimes. He's formerly of BYU, but was with Baylor last year. And Jeff Grimes, I voted for him last year, number one in the Broyles Award. I had Josh Gattis at number two. Well, Gattis ultimately won it. Jeff Grimes, I don't know if they release a second and third place, but I would be surprised if he didn't finish second, or Jim Knowles at Oklahoma State. I'm not sure how it all tallied up. Doesn't matter. Jeff Grimes, phenomenal. What I like about Jeff Grimes is he knows who he is. He says, I want to run the ball off tackle. I want to be physical. I want to get downhill with a one cut back, and I'm going to make it very, very, very easy on our players. But then when the opposing defenses are playing against it, we want it to be very difficult. So I think that he does an amazing job. Plus, he's just a great dude. Like, you just want, he's one of those guys you just want to gravitate towards. You want to play hard for him. He's physical. He preaches being physical at the line of scrimmage, physical at the point of attack. If you watch his wide receivers, they're physical, man. So I just appreciate his approach to it. So he'd make the top of the list as well. And then a guy that's surging. So I gave you four names. I know you asked for the top three. I'm not going to give you three. Come on, there's way too many good offensive minds out there. And there's still 100 others that I've probably left off. We're talking specific coordinators too, not actual head coaches that still call plays. I'm talking actual coordinators. The other guy's Zach Kittley. Formerly of Western Kentucky, he's now at Texas Tech. Prior to Western Kentucky, he was at Houston Baptist. But if you can take Bailey Zappe and break Joe Burrow's records throwing the football, you're clearly doing something right. So this is a young guy that I kind of have set to the side for the moment, but he could skyrocket up the list if he could do some special things with Texas Tech this year. And I'm not sure any of us would be that surprised if he did. He's been able to wave the magic wand a few different times, and now he's on everybody's radar. So it'll be real interesting, I think, to see if he can pull some things off this year, make Texas Tech relevant, and maybe pull off an upset or two in the Big 12.
All right, I got another one. This is another tough question, all right? Tim in Dallas. Simple question. Greg, please rank all the teams in the state of Texas during the 2022 season.
So I kind of see it like this. Houston 1, A&M 2, Texas 3, Baylor 4. You can make a case pretty easily to switch 3 and 4. That's not anything I'd have an issue with. I'd have TCU at 5, but you can make a case for SMU, who I'd have 6. At 7, I have UTSA, 8 North Texas, 9 UTEP, 10 Texas Tech, and then Rice and Texas State rounding out the bottom. I think 10 teams from the state of Texas will go bowling. Feel pretty good about that. I think one team has a legit chance to win 10 or 11. That's Houston. I think Texas A&M's probably around the 9-3, 10-2 in that vicinity. I think Texas 8-4, 9-3, Baylor 8-4, 9-3, and then 7-5, 7-5, and that, you know, so on and so forth. So it's really difficult. There's a lot of good teams in the state of Texas right now, and to think that 10 of 12 could ultimately get to the postseason says all you need to know about the Lone Star State and how quality the football is right now. For all of us here at Always College Football, thank you so much for being with us. We've had a blast so far today. Breaking down those 10-win teams from a year ago is so much fun. I actually think all three have a real chance to get back to it. So look forward to continuing to break down those teams. We'll do a series on that. All the 10-win teams, we're going to dive in. Likelihood of repeating, the good news, the bad news. Try to hit it from every possible angle for a comprehensive breakdown. Please like, rate, and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or if you're watching here with us on the in the ESPN YouTube channel. We really appreciate it. For all of us here at Always College Football, he's Mark Kubiak. I'm Greg McElroy. We hope you have a wonderful day. And remember, it's always college football.
Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.